I deserve better from you. It's Christmas, and I'm all alone." It was a waste of breath to attempt to defend himself. Never mind that up until yesterday, when her latest lover dumped her, she'd planned to be in Hawaii for the holiday. Then there were the little details of 3 broken ribs and internal sutures, and the fact that he wasn't supposed to drive. Not that he had any intention of sharing that little detail. She'd only twist things around to make it about her. Mainly, though, he wasn't going to visit his mother or invite her to visit because she was a pill-popping alcoholic and he couldn't be around her. "I'm going to hang up now, Mom. This conversation isn't helping either one of us. But, wait, there's something else. I need... Would you... Joshua, I need you to send me some money." "Of course. The real reason for this call." "I made your regular deposit last week." "Yes, but I need more. You have it, Joshua. You can give it to me today, before everything closes." "All right. Fine. I'll make a deposit this afternoon. And I'll go to hell for being an enabler." Josh ended the call, telephoned his personal banker, and authorized a transfer. He knew he shouldn't do it, but a man could only fight so many battles at one time, and he was hanging on by a thread as it was. The craving was a constant temptation pulling on his sleeve. He needed a distraction, so he called home to Oklahoma. Cindy sounded a little better, he thought. Her lingering cough didn't interrupt their conversation every few seconds on this call like it had on the last. That was a definite improvement, and he felt that little knot of tension reserved for his foster parents' health dissolve. "We'll do our best to get up to see you in January," Paul Christopher said. "No, I don't think the winter mountain air could possibly be good for your lungs. I'll come to you as soon as I'm able." "Speaking of which," Cindy said, "how are you managing your pain, Josh?" He hesitated. The Christophers knew his history, of course. Under other circumstances, he might have confided in them. But they were fighting their own fight right now. His mother, especially, had been seriously ill. He wouldn't add another burden of worry on them. "Good. I'm doing really good. With all the wonder drugs around, we forget how powerful a pain reliever plain old aspirin can be." They wished each other Merry Christmas and ended the call. Josh decided he'd been sitting too long, so he rose from his chair and headed for the kitchen to raid Caitlin's cookie jar. As he walked by the Christmas tree, his gaze snagged on the package that had arrived by messenger the previous afternoon. It had come gift-wrapped at his instruction, but he found he was curious to see what he'd bought. Careful not to tear anything, he peeled back the red foil paper, revealing a small jewelry box. He opened the box and silently whistled. The Sokolov emerald earrings matched the necklace he'd given Caitlin before the accident. He'd purchased them through an intermediary from his half-sister Arabella. He'd put the ring that completed the set, Amelia's inheritance, and now in his possession, in his safety deposit box. His half-sisters both had been quick to accept the offer he'd made for the pieces. An expat living in London, Arabella had expressed a desire to meet him the next time she visited the States. It was a vague enough request that he'd agreed to it. She'd said she'd bring Amelia along, too. If it ever happened, his mother would blow a gasket. Josh studied the earrings. The emeralds and the triple teardrops glowed an appropriate Christmas green. The diamonds surrounding them twinkled like tree lights. They'd be pretty as a Christmas ribbon dangling from her ears, wrapping the perfect package. Caitlin had certainly been a gift to him. He'd needed help doing just about everything those first few days out of the hospital. She'd refused to let him hire a nurse, and she'd moved right in. She was both his salvation and his damnation. He knew that for both their sakes he should send her away, but that was another thing he didn't have the strength to do, because even though he didn't want to admit it, he liked having her around. He liked the way she fussed over him, and he didn't want to be alone, even when the pain and craving turned him in on himself. He kept telling himself that after Christmas he'd send her home, knowing if he had any honor whatsoever, he'd do it today. Because he had no future with Caitlin Timberlake. He wouldn't drag her down into the quagmire of misfortune and bad luck that sucked at his shoes wherever he went. He wouldn't saddle her with a man who might sink into the slop again at any time. Disaster was his destiny, and he cared too much to suck her into it with him. But in the meantime, it was Christmas, and she decorated his home and his sugar cookies. He looked forward to giving her this gift. He rewrapped the earrings and slipped the box into the pocket of his jacket. Maybe he'd give it to her tonight. He didn't know if she was a Christmas Eve opener or the type who waited for Christmas Day. He knew she planned to go up to her mom and dad's house at Heartache Falls tomorrow morning after church. Supposedly, he'd been invited to tag along. But to his relief, the Callahan clan was in town for the holiday, and he would spend Christmas Day with them. Maybe. Or maybe he'd lie to everybody and stay home. He felt like crap. Maybe he'd go for a soak in the hot tub. The doc had yanked the staples at his last appointment, so he'd been given the all-clear for a soak. Maybe he'd ask Caitlin to join him. He needed a distraction right about now. Doing some hot tub skinny dipping was bound to help that. It might cause a different sort of pain, but that sort he would welcome. He found her seated at the kitchen table with a pencil in her hand, making notes on a square of green paper. A steaming cup of tea sat off to one side. Penny lay snuggled in her lap, and Christmas carols played softly in the background. In that moment, he craved her, craved what she represented almost as much as he craved the perks. Are you making a list? Yep, checking it twice. Since you brought up naughty, I'm headed for the hot tub. Want to join me? Her brows arched. The hot tub? Surely you're not. I mean, you can't. Not so soon. You'd rip your stitches. Josh gave his first honest smile in days. A soak, Caitlin. A simple, restful soak. Skepticism filled her frown. You're the one who brought up naughty. Hey, fantasies won't strain a stitch. Meet you there in 5? Sure. The hot tub was recessed in his back deck and was surrounded by a privacy screen that included an outdoor fireplace. It offered one of the pleasures of mountain living during winter, the contrast of the steaming water below and freezing air above. He stepped carefully into the tub and sank into the heat, which then seeped into his sore muscles and bones. When Caitlin joined him a short time later, and they sat in comfortable silence, his pain eased, his craving diminished. It was as if he'd popped 2 pills. He'd written about it in one of his journals. It's peace. It's like being inside a cabin in the woods when there's a foot of snow on the ground and it's still falling. It's sitting on a comfy sofa next to a crackling fire, wrapped up in a blanket with a dream girl watching a good movie. You're relaxed and content, and you don't have a care in the world. That's the euphoria of OCs. He needed Caitlin here in his house with him, just for a little longer, just until he got a little stronger. Josh? Caitlin asked. He didn't open his eyes. Do you think you might feel up to attending Celeste's open house tonight at Angel's Rest? He considered it. The Christmas Eve gathering was becoming quite the tradition here in Eternity Springs. He wouldn't mind a little company tonight, a little more distraction. If he could hang on a few more days, he might just dodge the bullet. He opened one eye and looked at her. I think I'd like that. Her expression lit up like the flashing star atop their Christmas tree. That's fabulous. I'm excited. It's always one of the best parties of the year. Did you go last year? No, I spent Christmas with the Christophers. Well, wait until you see Angel's Rest all angeled up. Celeste is almost always happy, but on Christmas Eve, she's joyful. It's fun to watch. Caitlin was fun to watch as she bubbled on about the party. I have a new red dress to wear. I bought it because it has the perfect neckline to show off the necklace you gave me. I'll have to go home and get it. Maybe I'll shower and dress there. That way I can make an entrance when I come back here to pick you up.
You always make an entrance, Kate. You do that naturally, and you know what? I think I'm all right to drive. I can pick you up. We're only going a half a mile.
No, absolutely not. The doctor said 6 full weeks.
He scowled at her. Makes me feel like a wuss, letting you drive me around everywhere.
Get over it. You know what else would be nice if you're up to it?
Going to the midnight service at church. I thought you were going in the morning with your parents.
I'd rather go this evening with you.
He started to shrug, but remembered his broken ribs. I can give it a try, I guess. I can sleep in church as easy as I can here.
You do that, and the Reverend will call you out, she warned with a twinkle in her eyes. He did that to Chase one year.
She launched into a tale about Christmas Eves of the past and soon had him laughing, a first since the accident. Later, after he showered and stood in front of the mirror shaving, he told himself he'd turned a corner. Physically, he felt halfway decent, and mentally, he wasn't nearly on edge. He finished shaving, then opened his medicine cabinet where he kept his aftershave. His gaze snagged on a row of amber bottles that didn't belong there. He froze.
Well, hell. Caitlin must have picked up the prescriptions the doctor had sent in at his last visit.
Temptation coiled like a rattlesnake. Josh slammed the cabinet door shut and backed away.
He was still standing, staring at his reflection in the mirror when he heard his front door open. Caitlin called, I'm back!
Sorry, I'm running late.
Slowly, he opened the medicine cabinet and found his aftershave.
10 minutes later, he walked into his living room to see Caitlin standing before the Christmas tree. She turned and smiled at him and took his breath away. Her dress was Christmas red, a simple fit-and-flare style with 3/4 sleeves and a modest neckline appropriate for church. It showed off the Sokolov necklace to perfection, green and red. She'd give Claire Lancaster a run for her money for the title of Miss Christmas. She folded her arms, tapped her lips with a finger, and said, I spy with my little eye something new beneath your Christmas tree, Mr. Tarkington. I can't see anything but you. You are a vision.
And he should give her his gift right now to complete tonight's outfit. Well, the gift tag reads, To Josh from Penny. I wonder what she got for you.
Penny? Surprised, he laughed. Shall I open it and see?
Oh, no, what blasphemy! It's not Christmas yet. You get to open one gift after church.
So I guess that means you won't open my gift to you now?
Nope.
That's a mistake. Just saying.
Why is it a mistake?
Guess you'll have to wait and see.
Does it have something to do with that other new box beneath the tree?
Your little eye did quite a bit of spying, didn't it?
It's tradition. I'm all about tradition. Apparently, pestering him with guesses was part of her tradition, too, because she did exactly that during the drive to Angel's Rest. They arrived shortly before Celeste asked her guests to gather in the central hallway for a special announcement. She climbed the stairs to the second floor landing and stood at the banister, waiting for stragglers to make their way into the hallway. The space quickly grew crowded, and when another guest accidentally elbowed Josh in the ribs, he decided he'd find an out-of-the-way place to listen to Celeste's big announcement. Later, the guests all said it was a miracle that someone had been standing in just the perfect spot to catch Celeste when the banister broke and she lost her balance and tumbled toward the ground. The fact that the someone was Josh and the impact damaged his mending ribs was a terrible bit of bad luck.
Journal entry. I looked back in a previous journal and found something I wrote shortly after I arrived in Eternity Springs. I wrote, I have found a place. They claim it's a little piece of heaven, a place where broken hearts come to heal. I'm not here to mend a broken heart. I'm not exactly sure why I'm here except I needed somewhere to go, and I landed here and liked it. There's this woman here. I don't know how to describe her. It's like she's everybody's grandmother, everybody's best friend, everybody's port in a storm, everybody's angel. She'll give you hell if you need it, and a pat on the back when it's deserved. I like her. She's soothing. Boy, was I wrong. She damn near killed me. Who says angels can fly? Chapter 17. At the local medical clinic, tests and x-rays revealed new damage to Josh's ribs, but thankfully no troublesome issues with internal organs. He remained at the clinic overnight on doctor's orders and went home to his own bed on the afternoon of Christmas Day. There, Caitlin handed him a glass of water and a pain pill. Josh swallowed both. He told Caitlin to enjoy Christmas dinner with her family and not to rush home, because he intended to sleep. He did exactly that until he woke to debilitating pain. Josh took another Percocet. A week passed. On New Year's Eve, Josh stood in his bathroom staring at the lone pill in the bottle of painkillers for almost 5 minutes before he dumped it into the toilet. On New Year's Day, the beast was back. The bitter wind of the mid-January morning brought tears to Caitlin's eyes as she hurried up the street toward the vet clinic, where she needed to pick up Penny's heartworm prevention medicine. At least she tried to tell herself that the wind, and not the exchange she'd just had with Josh, was the source of her tears. After the last 2 weeks, a part of her wanted to elbow him in the ribs just out of spite. He'd been impossible to live with. More than once, she'd considered moving back to her house and leaving him to fend for himself. She wasn't quite there yet, but... The door chime jangled as she opened the door and stepped into the clinic to the sound of loud barking. "I'll be right with you," her sister-in-law called from an exam room. "No rush," Caitlin called back. She sat in one of the waiting room chairs, picked up a National Geographic, and began flipping through it. She found an article about the Great Wall of China and began reading. Her mind wandered by the time she turned the page. What was wrong with Josh? She couldn't figure him out. She could understand his grumpiness right after Christmas because in many respects the act of catching Celeste had sent him back to recovery day one. But he'd been much nicer to her that week after Christmas than he was now. Aloud, she muttered, "I swear, if he snaps at me one more time, I'm going to bite back." "You having trouble with a dog, Caitlin?" Lori asked as she exited the exam room, carrying her dad's sedated Boston Terrier Mortimer in her arms. Gently, she placed the dog into a kennel, shut the door, then turned a curious look toward Caitlin. "More like a horse's ass." "Ah," Lori nodded sagely. "Dare I surmise that Josh is being a difficult patient?" "Difficult? Ha! That doesn't begin to describe him." Caitlin shot to her feet. "He's impossible. Do you know what he snapped at me about this morning? He was toasting a bagel, and he burned it, and it was somehow my fault because I turned the dial when I cleaned the toaster. Never mind that all he had to do was check the setting. Then he grumbled because I put the jam in the door of the refrigerator when everyone knows it belongs on the shelf. He even growled at Penny this morning." At that, the amused smile on Lori's face faded. "He was mean to his dog?" "Yes," Caitlin exclaimed before almost immediately qualifying. "Well, not really. Josh was emptying the kitchen trash can and he set the bag on the floor behind him while he dealt with the liner. Penny bit into it and he made a mess. He scolded her. As well he should. Loudly." Caitlin had a long list of other complaints she could make, but whining was so unattractive. "I need to pick up Penny's heartworm medicine." "All righty." Lori walked to the cabinet where she kept her retail goods and removed a package of pills. "How is Josh set on pet shampoo? Savannah Turner just dropped off a new batch of pet products that smell heavenly. Here." Lori opened a bottle of shampoo and held it out for Caitlin to sniff.
Isn't that fabulous?
Caitlin smelled coconut and orange and something else she couldn't place.
It makes me think of summer. On a day like today, that's a good thing.
Tell me about it. We're supposed to get another foot of snow overnight.
Lori held up the shampoo, a question on her face, and Caitlin nodded.
Through no fault of her own, and as a result of her back injury, Penny was a very stinky dog.
Caitlin nodded.
Definitely add the shampoo. While Lori wrote up a sales receipt and bagged the purchases, Caitlin retrieved Josh's credit card from her wallet. Seeing his name on the card turned her thoughts in his direction once again.
He's shutting himself off from me, Lori. He's been a different man since the accident, but especially since Christmas. I don't know why, and I don't know what to do about it.
Lori accepted the card Caitlin extended toward her, saying,
Could he be depressed? A lot of people suffer from holiday depression.
I talked to Rose about that, but when I brought the subject up with him, he waved it off and claimed nothing was wrong. He made a stupid joke about being depressed about the Broncos' loss in the playoffs.
Chase is still a bit depressed about that loss, too.
Yeah, well, Josh isn't. He didn't even watch the game.
Lori's eyes rounded in alarm.
Seriously? Chase and I have watched Bronco football with Josh in the past. He was into it. We even talked about it because he's a recent Bronco convert. He grew up a Raiders fan. I can't imagine him not being interested in the game.
Maybe he turned it off after one of the team's numerous miscues?
He didn't watch at all. I was there. He went for a walk, a long one.
Josh had been taking lots of long walks of late, by himself, in all kinds of weather. More than once she'd asked to tag along, and he always refused the request. He always had an excuse, though generally a poor one.
Caitlin sighed and continued.
I don't know what to do. Some days I think it would be best for me to pack up my things and move home. He doesn't need me there any longer. He's well enough to live by himself again.
So move home. He'll miss you.
Possibly. Probably. Except I'm afraid if I leave, he'll never invite me back. Any hopes I have of building a life with him will wither away to nothing.
So this mood of his hasn't changed your mind? You still want to be with him?
Yes.
Caitlin recognized that she said it with less certainty than she had even 2 weeks ago.
He's trying to drive me away, and I'm afraid he just might succeed. But I sense that something else is going on here, Lori, something I don't understand.
It's as if there's a puzzle piece missing and he knows where it is, but I don't.
That's tough. Have you said that to him, just like that?
Caitlin thought about it a moment.
No, not just like that. Maybe that's a place to start.
You could be right, though I expect he'll just blow me off or snap and growl at me.
You're not happy with the way things are now. What do you have to lose?
The bell on the door jangled again as the local banker's wife walked in with her cat. The three women exchanged small talk for a few minutes. Then Caitlin took her leave. Outside, she turned her face into the wind. This time, when tears leaked from the corner of her eyes and she blamed it on the bitter wind, she told herself the truth. With a renewed sense of purpose, Caitlin began the walk home to Josh's house. She was halfway there when a car pulled up beside her and her mother rolled down the window.
Hello, sweet pea. This is Kismet. I had just decided to call you to see if you could steal an hour away. I'm on my way to the spa at Angel's Rest for a pedicure. Want to tag along? My treat.
Caitlin looked up the street toward Tarkington Automotive, where Mr. Grumpy Pants had probably gone to do paperwork or hide from her, or both. A spa date with her mom sounded like just the pick-me-up she needed. 20 minutes later, she and Allie sat side by side in pedicure chairs, their feet soaking in scented, toasty, warm water. Caitlin talked to her mom a couple of times a week on the phone, but they hadn't seen each other since Christmas because Mac and Allie had taken one of their getaways.
So how was Cabo? Did Dad catch any fish?
Cabo was beautiful, as always, and yes, Dad is a happy fisherman.
So, tell me what we missed while we were gone. Is Jax wrapping things up at Gingerbread House?
Yes.
Work slowed down a bit last week. Claire had a stomach bug, so we stayed home with the kids, and that delayed our walkthrough. It's now scheduled for next Monday.
That's exciting, though I hate to hear that Claire has been ill. She's better now?
Yes.
And how about your hero? I trust his ribs are healing all right?
Caitlin hesitated. She'd like to pour out her heart to her mom, but she feared if she started, she wouldn't stop.
Yes, I think so. He's pretty grouchy, though.
That's understandable. Broken ribs are painful to begin with, and to have them injured twice.
Allie shuddered. That poor guy.
Had Caitlin not been watching close, she wouldn't have noticed the sheen of tears in her mother's eyes.
Mom, what's wrong?
Allie closed her eyes and gave her head a little shake.
I'm sorry, it's nothing, I'm just tired. Traveling gets harder all the time.
Unease rippled through Caitlin. When was the last time you went to the doctor?
Allie rolled her eyes. I went in December, Mother.
I'm fine. You have my word. Like I said, traveling is harder than it used to be. It doesn't help that Dad and I stayed out late last night. I planned to sleep on the plane, but the ladies across the aisle from me never stopped talking.
At that point, their nail techs arrived, and Caitlin knew better than to pursue any serious line of questioning in front of them. Her mother was a private person. To Allie Timberlake, there was a time and place for intimate conversations, and the salon wasn't it. Instead, she entertained Caitlin and the nail techs with tales of shopping at a Mexican market and her ideas for a Taste of Mexico menu at the Yellow Kitchen. Of course, Allie's penchant for privacy didn't exactly extend to questions she wished to ask of others. While the technician slathered a salt scrub on her calves, she glanced at Caitlin and asked,
"So after all the drama of Christmas Eve, did you and Josh ever exchange Christmas presents?"
"We did."
Caitlin smiled as she recalled how the gift exchange had gone down. After Christmas Eve, partygoers helped both Celeste and Josh back onto their feet following Josh's miraculous catch. Dr. Rose Cicero insisted he be taken to the clinic for new x-rays. She'd kept him for observation overnight, and rather than spending the first minutes of Christmas Day seated beside Josh at the midnight church service, Caitlin had sat between her parents and her brother and his wife. No sense spending the night at Josh's bedside. The man was dosed up on painkillers and out like Santa on December 26th. The week slowly passed, with Josh spending much of the time in bed. Traditionally, Caitlin's family kept their holiday trimmings up until Epiphany. But on New Year's Eve, a little depressed and with nothing to do but watch a movie by herself, Caitlin began taking down decorations and stripping the tree of its ornaments and lights. She had everything boxed up but the 12 Dogs of Christmas ornament set when Josh came out of his bathroom, still damp from a shower. He wore loose-fitting drawstring pants and a button-up flannel shirt. It was the first time all week he dressed in something more than pajama bottoms and rib wrap.
Maybe the worst of it is over, Caitlin thought, even as she observed the furrow of pain on his brow and the tightness around his lips.
Wow. It looks barren in here.
Caitlin nodded. It does, but at the same time I always like getting the clutter put away and creating a sense of a new start for a new year. I have a pan of hot chocolate on the stove. Would you like a cup?
I'd love one. Thanks.
Caitlin went into the kitchen and filled a mug with the steaming drink, then returned to the family room. Josh stood in front of the fireplace, his gaze focused on the pair of wrapped packages sitting on the mantel in place of the Santa she'd already boxed up to put away. He accepted the mug, then nodded toward the mantel.
What are you planning to do with those?
I was waiting for you to tell me.
I think we'd better open them now. If we wait until after midnight, then they'll be next year's gifts.
I'm not quite sure I follow that, but okay. Let's exchange our gifts. I'll admit it's been difficult for me to wait.
Think I got you something good, hmm?
Actually, I'm more excited to see what you think of my gift.
Well, let's see, shall we?
He retrieved the package tagged to her and offered it, saying,
Merry Christmas and Happy New Year, Caitlin. Here's hoping we get through New Year's Eve without something, or someone, falling from the sky.
I'll drink to that. They clicked their mugs in toast. Then Caitlin handed over her gift to him. They both set down their mugs and began opening their gifts. Josh was a ripper, Caitlin discovered. She liked to carefully untie bows and peel back tape, so he had his box opened first. She paused in her efforts to watch his reaction.
Alarm.
His gaze shot up to meet hers, and she immediately recognized his fear. Hastily, she assured, I didn't read your journals, Josh. I would never invade your privacy that way. But I noticed the one beside your bed and the stack of them in your closet.
He held her stare for another moment, then visibly relaxed. He turned his attention to the handcrafted journal. This is beautiful. I've never seen anything like it. The clasp looks old. Is it a door hinge?
Yes, it dates to the 1890s, as does the lock and key.
Handmade paper, too, he mused, flipping through the pages.
Yes.
It's great. Seriously awesome. Thank you.
He started to lean toward her and lower his head. She lifted her face in anticipation of a kiss that never happened. Instead, he grimaced, straightened, and grumbled,
Damn ribs. Open your gift, Caitlin.
She decided she'd claim that kiss the next time he was horizontal, and then she returned her attention to his gift to her. She uncovered a small white box. Inside sat a black velvet jewelry box, not a ring box. It was bigger than that. She silently scolded herself not to be disappointed. She'd never anticipated getting a ring for Christmas. Dreamt about it, maybe, but never anticipated. She flipped open the lid and caught her breath. At the spa at Angel's Rest, the nail tech lifted her right foot from the bowl and began to rub the bottom of her foot with a pumice stone. As always, it tickled and jerked Caitlin's thoughts back to the present. Presents. Her mother had asked about Christmas presents. I gave him a journal, and he gave me a gorgeous pair of earrings that matched the necklace he gave me a few weeks before Christmas.
The one you wore Christmas Eve?
At Caitlin's nod, Allie continued. I've been meaning to ask you about that. I want a closer look at it. It's fabulous, a true statement piece. The earrings are just as gorgeous. The setting is unique, and truly the loveliest vintage jewelry I've ever seen. A bit fancy for Eternity Springs, but I don't care. I love them. You'll have to find out the designer's name, and... Allie broke off the thought when her phone rang. She glanced down at the number and thumbed the green button. Hello, Mac. I'm with Caitlin at Angel's... Allie broke off abruptly and listened for a moment.
Oh, no. Mac?
She pulled one foot from the tech's hand and the other from the bowl and motioned toward a towel. Into the phone, she said... I'm going to hang up and call 911. Caitlin sat up. What's wrong? Mom, what happened? Allie ignored her daughter and swiped the towel over her legs.
Are you sure? Mom!
Allie shook her head at Caitlin and spoke into the phone.
All right?
Yes, all right. Stay where you are, Mac. Don't try to get up. I'll be right there. I'm going to leave Angel's Rest now. Here, reassure your daughter while I put my shoes and socks on.
Allie shoved the phone toward Caitlin, who took it and said, Dad?
Max spoke in a determined and cheery voice.
I'm okay, Snookums. I just tripped on something and twisted my ankle. No big deal.
Relief washed over her. Oh, Dad, are you sure it's not broken?
Positive. It's not even that bad of a strain. I wouldn't have bothered your mother about it, except I'm at the bottom of the basement stairs and...
Dad, tell me you didn't fall down the stairs.
I didn't fall down the stairs. What I did manage to do was lock myself in the basement.
How in the world did you do that?
Long story, baby girl. One that makes me look really foolish, I'm afraid.
Caitlin lifted her feet away from the pedicure chair's bowl, saying, I'll ride up with Mom.
No.
The harsh snap in his tone took her aback. He said it again, more gently this time.
No, honey. Thanks, but don't bother. I promise you I'm just fine. A little embarrassed, but just fine.
By now, Allie had donned her shoes and crossed the salon to the coat rack. She slipped into her jacket, then returned for her phone, wiggling her fingers to signal Caitlin to hand it over.
Mom wants her phone. Give it to her. Come see me tomorrow, okay?
Okay, Caitlin said reluctantly. Then she handed the phone back to her mother.
Sorry for the interruption. Finish your pedicure. Tell Josh I said hello. Maybe we'll come down and visit with you two tomorrow. Dad and Josh can compare injuries.
Mom, are you sure that... Gotta run, bye.
Allie leaned down and kissed Caitlin's cheek, then blew out the front door. Just as Celeste stepped inside, carrying a box and a stack of magazines.
Well, Caitlin muttered, that was strange. Dad locks himself in the basement? Mom goes from brittle to boisterous to bizarre in the time it takes to soften the calluses on her feet? Her parents were getting stranger by the day. And Caitlin continued to worry about her father. Mac Timberlake had never been a clumsy man.
First he drops the collection plate, and now he trips and manages to lock himself in the basement? What the heck?
Hello, Caitlin, Celeste said. What a lovely color you've chosen for your toes. Nothing like sunshine yellow to brighten up a winter day.
Yellow? Caitlin hadn't picked yellow. She glanced down at the tray between her chair and her mother's and saw her choice of Valentine red and sunshine yellow. Her mom had chosen sunshine yellow? Allie Timberlake seldom wore any nail polish bolder than a pastel pink. She never wore yellow.
Yep. Stranger not by the day, but by the minute.
I suppose you're right. Caitlin smiled up at Celeste as the nail tech picked up the bottle of bright yellow polish and shook it. A little sunshine never hurts.
Speaking of sunshine, how is our resident hero doing today?
What Mr. Grouch and Gloom had to do with sunshine, Caitlin couldn't hazard a guess.
He's doing well, she replied.
She wasn't at all certain she spoke the truth, but Celeste had felt so guilty about the Christmas Eve fall that Caitlin wouldn't dream of saying otherwise.
Harriet brought him cookies again this morning, and that always perks him up.
Harriet looks good, doesn't she? I visited with her yesterday, and she's getting around on that new hip of hers quite well.
Yes, she's back to her old self.
Plus, she's told us she's put down a payment on a new camper. She's joining the Alley Cats for their first camping weekend in May.
Harriet has joined the Tornado Alley Cats?
Celeste's blue eyes gleamed with delight.
Exceptional news. I think that's just what she needs.
Now, I'd best toddle along. I still have a long to-do list for today.
Will life ever slow down, I wonder?
Before I go, I have a stack of new magazines. May I interest you in Architectural Digest, National Geographic, or People? Caitlin had stopped even scanning the front cover of People at the grocery store checkout line when they started publishing pictures of Chase during his Globetrotter phase. Since she'd paged through that issue of the National Geographic today at the vet clinic, she smiled at Celeste and said,
Architectural Digest, please.
Celeste handed over the magazine.
Enjoy, my dear. And remember, even the longest, darkest winter days eventually end. Hold on to your faith in spring. Keep your eyes on your sunshine nail polish.
Smiling, Caitlin wiggled her sunshine toes, opened the magazine, and began idly turning the pages as she waited for her polish to dry. A men's cologne ad caught her attention. Steel gray eyes and bristled jaw. If the model's hair was a little longer, he could be Josh. She sighed, skimmed a two-page story about an 18th-century Italian villa, then turned the page to see a photo of a distinguished man with salt-and-pepper hair leaning against an American luxury car. He could have been her dad.
Josh. Her dad.
What was the deal with the tight-lipped men in her life? Both of them had something going on that she didn't understand. In her dad's case, she feared it might be health-related.
There.
She'd admitted it. She'd been circling the idea for a while now, afraid to put it into words. Based on the way her parents were acting, it was the only thing that made sense. Caitlin's stomach took a sick tumble. But if that was the reason for his unusual behavior, why keep it a secret? That wasn't the way her family rolled. The more she thought about it, the more annoyed she grew. Honesty was part of their bedrock. Obfuscations, denials, and lies had no place in Timberlake family relationships. Dad should know better. Maybe it was time she called them on it. She flipped back to the men's cologne ad and glared at the gray-eyed man. You too, Josh. I've been patient, more than patient. I've been kind and caring and understanding. I don't understand why you run hot and cold more often than a kitchen faucet. It was more than sore and aching ribs, more than the frustration of physical limitations. Something had built the castle walls of his emotions. Someone, most likely, had handed him the shovel to dig the moat. She drummed her fingers against the magazine. She'd bet her bottom dollar that family was the crux of the what, who, and why. He spoke of his foster family easily, but he'd never told her anything about his birth family or what calamity had placed him in foster care. She'd ask, but he'd always dodged the questions. I'm tired of dodges. I'm tired of dodges and secrets and sidesteps. Problems can't be solved if they're never acknowledged. Even heroes can be challenged. Except it's hard to have a good battle with a warrior who's wounded. Frustrated, she turned a half dozen more pages of the magazine, not paying real attention to either the articles or the ads, until she reached the magazine's center spread, and her gaze fell on a familiar face. She did a double take. Whoa. It was a vintage black-and-white photograph of a 1927 stage production of Hamlet. The actor was the spitting image of Josh. The caption beneath the photo identified him as Thomas J. Trammell. The article was about the Trammell family's summer house estate in Maine. She knew of the Trammell family, of course. They were an American acting dynasty, whose beginnings traced back generations. A smile played across her face as she studied the picture. She'd have to get a copy of this magazine and show it to Josh. Wonder if he'll also see the resemblance. She started reading the article, learned about the 1835 marriage of an Irish comedian to an actress who'd made her first stage appearance at the age of 5. The next generation gave the family their first major star. And the tradition continued through the transition to silent films and then talkies. By now, the Trammells were considered Hollywood royalty. Benjamin Joshua Trammell made a name for himself on stage as one of the finest Shakespearean actors the world has ever seen. His daughter Eleanor was an established movie star in the golden age of Hollywood. The Hollywood queen had married an Arabian sheik who loved to shower her with gems, and a competition ensued. Every time Richard Burton made news by giving Elizabeth Taylor a fabulous new jewel, Eleanor's husband made a point to outdo him. A photo near the bottom of the page showed a sparkling ruby and diamond brooch. Caitlin turned the page and read the next paragraph in the article. Eleanor's favorite gems, the Sokolov emeralds, were said to be those gifted to her upon the birth of her son. Caitlin glanced at the corresponding photograph and froze. Holy cow! Those were her necklace, her earrings! No wonder they were so beautiful. The design was a copy of a famous set. And with today's technology, man-made jewels often outshine the real ones. But as she continued reading the article, unease rippled through her. There was that portrait. No, surely not. Caitlin dragged her attention back to the article and read about Eleanor and her siblings' descendants. Toward the end of the piece, a name jumped out at her. Ben's son, J.B., by actress Jana Tarkington, began his career at just 15 months of age, when he landed his first job in a cat food commercial. The release of Martin Holdberg's blockbuster hit Starseeker made him a star at the age of 8. Audiences and critics alike praised young J.B.'s performance with his extraterrestrial friend. When asked about the boy's early success and his future plans, his grandfather said,
"Acting is part of JB's DNA. The profession is his destiny. He will return to the set and or the stage someday. He has many more roles to play, many more performances to give."
The photograph was a still from Starseeker. Caitlin studied it, searching for a sign of the man in the boy.
The eyes.
His eyes had always been unique. He looked sweet and innocent, angelic. Time had taken care of that. Caitlin's fingers trembled as she deliberately shut the magazine. She felt lightheaded and dazed. The article had been a 2x4 to her head. She set the magazine aside, then leaned over and tested the polish with the pad of her index finger. Dry. J.B. Trammell. She pulled on her socks over sunshine yellow toes. Jana Torkington. She shoved her feet into her boots and tied the laces. The Sokolov emeralds. She stood and stared down at the Architectural Digest cover and read the article headlines. American Royalty's Summer Escape. Benjamin Joshua Trammell. Jana Torkington. The Sokolov Emeralds, J.B. Trammell, the doppelganger portrait, Josh Tarkington. Josh Tarkington, auto mechanic. No, no, no. There must be an explanation. This was coincidence, that's all. A wacky series of coincidences. So he looked like the guy in a vintage photograph, and the costume jewelry he'd given her was a copy of real stuff. So his last name was the same as some movie star's mother's maiden name. And he never breathed a word about his birth family. Coincidences do happen, that's all. Otherwise, what was she to think? That a movie star was hiding in Eternity Springs pretending to be an auto mechanic? Maybe he's researching a part. It fit, all of it, it fit. But no, that's crazy. He wouldn't have ended up in Oklahoma City if he was a Trammell. It's a coincidence, it has to be. He'll probably laugh when I tell him about this, if he's in a good mood, that is. But what if it isn't a coincidence? What if I'm right? I can't be right. I have to ask him, she murmured. I have to ask. After paying their bill, her mother had neglected to do so in her hurry to leave. Caitlin stuck her head into Celeste's office and asked to borrow the magazine. There's an article I'd like to show Josh. I'll return it by the time you close today. Of course you may borrow it, Celeste said. No need to make a special trip to return it either. Next time you're headed this way, we'll be fine. Thanks. And Caitlin? Yes, ma'am? On the way into the spa, I noticed something that made me think of you. It's about halfway between the sidewalk and the big blue spruce to the north, halfway between the front door and the parking lot, in the snow. Take a look as you leave, will you, please? It's a sign. One should hold close to your heart in coming days. She didn't have the patience to translate Celeste's cryptic advice right now. Distracted, she said, Sure, thanks, Celeste. I'll see you soon, I'm sure. Goodbye, dear. And please tell Josh that I pray every day for his speedy recovery. I will. Caitlin retrieved her coat from the hall tree and exited the building. Halfway to the parking lot, she remembered Celeste's request and looked northward. Since she didn't have a clue about what she was looking for, she didn't know whether to look high or low or... There. Snowdrops. White teardrop flowers on green stems pushing skyward through the blanket of snow. A promise that spring will come. A sign. One I should hold close in the coming days. Apprehension blew through Caitlin like a blizzard. Journal entry. Tormento has become a problem. He is a bad influence on Sherman, feeding him, suggesting evil things. It is not good to have monsters running around inside one's mind and body. They destroy one's soul.
Chapter 18. Josh sat on the side of his bed, trying to work up the desire to move. His chest hurt worse than it had yesterday. He needed to cough, but coughing damn near killed him, so he tried to stifle the urge. He probably should call the doctor. He'd been warned that pneumonia was often a complication of broken ribs, and pneumonia could kill you. Dying didn't worry him all that much, but the thought of having to cough his way to the grave did give him pause. The need to cough won out over will, and by the time the fit was done, he'd felt as if he'd hacked up both lungs and broken at least two more ribs. He looked toward Penny, standing in his doorway with head cocked to one side, watching him.
"Wipe that look of pity off your face," he grumbled. "It's demeaning to be pitied by a crippled dog."
At the sound of his voice, she padded over to his bedside. Under other circumstances, Josh would have scratched her belly and behind her ears, but bending over wasn't an option. Instead, he rubbed her with his foot.
"You're looking pretty today. Caitlin takes good care of you, doesn't she? She takes good care of us both. The woman is a saint.
She deserved better from him, too. The worse he felt, the bigger an ass he became. He couldn't explain how she sometimes wandered into the line of fire between his demons and himself. That's what had happened this morning. He'd been hungry for the first time in ages and decided to toast a blueberry bagel. He couldn't say why, but the scent triggered his cravings. She'd walked into the kitchen while he was riding the high of the memory, his heart racing, his nerve endings tingling in anticipation. She'd said something, he hadn't a clue what, and he'd damn near bitten her head off.
Afterward, he'd crawled back into bed and slept the sleep of the shamed. "I should send her home," he muttered to Penny. "If I had an ounce of integrity, I'd send her home today."
Good thing he had no integrity, because he didn't want to do that. He desperately didn't want to do that. He loved having her company. Loved being the recipient of her care and concern and first-class pampering. He loved her. Still. He met Penny's solemn brown-eyed gaze and observed, "I am so screwed." Speaking triggered another cough that was longer and harder than the last and left him seriously wondering if he might have broken something else. Maybe a hot drink would help. Soothe the cough tickle away. He walked into the kitchen, filled the kettle with water, and set it onto the stove. While he waited for the water to boil, he brooded over the truth he'd avoided thinking about since the accident. What the hell was he going to do? Face reality, that's what. This was bad. Hell. Love was hell. Hell was exactly what he deserved. He lied to himself, right from the very beginning. He'd lied to himself. He'd known he was playing with fire. Friends and sex never mix. He loved her. And although she'd never said it, he knew she loved him too. She showed it every hour of every day. So what the hell are you going to do about it? Nothing. That's what. Even if he wanted to throw caution to the wind and take a run at happily ever after again, he couldn't, wouldn't, do that to her. Because he loved her, he had to give her up. Not because he actually believed that he was cursed with bad luck. He knew that was an easy way to kid himself and deflect others. Yes, he'd had a run of bad luck, no doubt about it. But did he honestly believe that daring to commit to something permanent with Caitlin would doom her to being swept up in a freak tornado, or hit by a car, or fallen upon by an angel sans wings? No. The bottom line was that Caitlin deserved someone better than him. She needed someone she could trust, someone she could count on being there when she needed him. Someone who wasn't a ticking time bomb. He was close to exploding now, closer than he'd been since he'd crawled his way out the last time. If he hadn't had that one moment of strength that allowed him to dump the perks again, he'd be swirling down the toilet bowl himself right now. It was going to happen. Someday, sometime, He'd fight the good fight for as long as he could manage, but eventually he would tire and weaken. He would surrender, and when that happened, there would be no coming back, not again. He knew it in his soul. His sobriety, his life, was one weak trigger moment away. He loved Caitlin too much to tire to the disaster in waiting that was his future. She deserved so much better, so much more. She deserved a happy ever after that actually lasted ever after. The kettle began to whistle, and as Josh poured boiling water into a Tarkington automotive mug, Penny's whining caught his notice. She stood at the back door, her attention locked on something outside. Had she been able to shake her tail, he knew it would be whipping up a wind. He opened the door and she dashed off, surprisingly fast, in her two-wheeled chair. He figured she was after a squirrel, or maybe a bird. Dachshunds had been bred as hunters, and Penny's disability did not affect those instincts. Just last week, she'd managed to take out a bird, which spoke to the truth of bird brain. How dumb must a bird be to allow a dog in a squeaky wheelchair to sneak up on him? When Penny disappeared around his outdoor kitchen, he turned away from the door and opened his walk-in pantry in search of tea bags. As he reached for a box of Earl Grey, the need to cough overwhelmed his ability to stifle it. In order to minimize the pain, he tried to hold himself completely erect during the event. Coughing with broken ribs competed with withdrawal in the pain department. Pain awoke the cravings. He very much feared that having Caitlin Timberlake around was the only thing keeping him sober. Furious and hurting, he swept a row of canned goods off the shelf. They clattered to the floor. He panted like Penny after a run up the hill. He needed to let Caitlin go. He needed to break this off, to send her away. He needed to save her from himself. But damn it, he wanted just a little more time. He wanted to make love with her one more time. He couldn't do that now. The pain wouldn't allow it. The devil whispered in his ear, "There are ways. There are positions you could manage. You could do it if you refilled the prescription. That's all you'd have to do. Refill the prescription, grovel a bit, and lure her into bed. You could do it." Barking from outside yanked him from his reverie, and he exited the pantry to look through the window to see. Trouble. Penny had slung her tires going over a stepping stone walk, and now she'd managed to get herself caught in his woodpile. Josh muttered a curse, lifted his coat from its hook in the mudroom, and then tossed it aside because he couldn't put it on by himself. He stepped into his backyard coughing, hurting, filled with despair, and trying to pound his demons back into submission. Penny's path through the backyard was obvious. From the spot where her wheelchair lay tipped over beside a stone, she'd carved a path through the snow to his outdoor kitchen. There, she dragged herself up to and over rough bricks and mortar barely softened by a scant 2 inches of snow. The streaks of blood began, just beyond the patio furniture, where she'd dragged herself over the cast-iron chair's L-shaped legs. Oh, Penny. It was a problem with her. She couldn't feel her belly and legs, so when she'd escaped her wheelchair and dragged herself, she'd scraped her skin raw. But dang it, she'd managed to climb the woodpile? What was she after? Not a skunk, he hoped. Please, not a skunk. She continued to bark, continued to claw her way across snow-dusted logs. Stop that, Penny, Josh called. Stop, before you hurt your... Logs rolled, crashed. Penny yelped. Josh spat a curse. A fox scurried out of the woodpile. At least it's not a skunk. A cold breeze battered Josh as he hurried toward the woodpile, taking care to secure his footing. The last thing either he or Penny needed was for him to slip and fall. She was trapped in the center of the woodpile, with at least 6 heavy logs on top of her. Her pained whimpers shot arrows into his heart. Josh looked around for help. Nobody in sight.
not exactly a surprise since the garage was closed and the temperature hovered in the 20s. He was on his own. His surgeon had told him not to lift anything as heavy as a gallon of milk or risk tearing his stitches. But what